change things up a little bit this morning. I'm kind of confused. But that's not the only reason I'm confused. Turn your Bibles, if you will, to the fourth Psalm. I think that I might just as well go back to the third Psalm, because at least those who are more studious than I are able to put together the Psalms better than I do think that these two Psalms were written during the time of Absalom's rebellion against David, and one of them appears to be a morning psalm and prayer. And the second one seems to be an evening psalm and prayer. So I'm just going to go ahead and read the third psalm. Not going to make a lot of comment about that, but you'll see, I hope at least, that it fits with the fourth psalm as well. And we're going to make some comment about the things that are said in the fourth psalm. So beginning with the third psalm, Lord, how they have increased who troubled me. Many are they who rise up against me. Many are they who say of me, there is no help for him in God. But you, O Lord, are a shield for me, my glory and the one who lifts up my head. I cried to the Lord with my voice, and he heard me from his holy hill. I lay down and slept. I awoke, for the Lord sustained me. I will not be afraid of 10,000 of people who have set themselves against me all around. Arise, O Lord, save me, O my God, for you have struck all my enemies on the cheekbone. You have broken the teeth of the ungodly. Salvation belongs to the Lord. Your blessing is upon your people. Now the fourth psalm. Hear me when I call, O God of my righteousness. You have relieved me in my distress. Have mercy on me and hear my prayer. How long, O you sons of men, will you turn my glory to shame? How long will you love worthlessness and seek falsehood? But know that the Lord has set apart for himself him who is godly. The Lord will hear when I call to him. Be angry and do not sin. Meditate within your heart on your bed and be still. Offer the sacrifices of righteousness and put your trust in the Lord. There are many who say, who will show us any good? Lord, lift up the light of your countenance upon us. You have put gladness in my heart. More than in the season that their grain and wine increased, I will both lie down in peace and sleep. For you alone, O Lord, make me to dwell in safety. I think there's some really interesting things in that psalm. And you probably noticed that the poetry that's written here in this psalm is not like much of the poetry that we read elsewhere, because it is its meter is in different sections and actually even addresses different people as he writes. But it's really a psalm of comfort for David at the end of the day. So we said one is a morning psalm. He awakened and he said these are the things that he thought and the things that he said. And the other one are things he thinks about as the day closes and as he approaches the time for sleep. And hopefully we'll see a little bit of that as we're looking in the lesson this morning. And I might say to you, as God's people, I think sometimes our expectations may be too low. And it seems to me, as we're looking at the different way people are writing, there's either an expectation that goes beyond the grace that God has promised, or there's a lack of faith that does not reach the grace of God as is promised. So sometimes our expectations are too low. And think about it this way. When we face problems, sometimes it seems to me about all that we expect really to receive from the Lord is courage. And that's not bad, but is that good enough? Is that all we seek when we seek in prayer? And just think back in your prayers, and that's one thing I say about the verbal collective prayers that we have in this congregation that our men think about a lot of different things in their prayers, and I really appreciate that. And we're not repetitive in those things. There are things that we think about from time to time about situations as they exist at a given time, and those are expressed in our prayers, even as, you know, different people appear on our prayer board and in our minds and things like that, that we're thinking about different things, and those are good things. So I'm not really saying to us as this group that we set our sights too low, because we've often expressed how much faith we have in prayer in this congregation, and I truly think that's exceptional. But I think overall sometimes we, as the people of God, set our expectations perhaps too low. David talks about the things that he sees and that he observes, and he has enemies. In both these psalms, he talks about his enemies, and of course Absalom, and if that's the situation that's being referred to, he was a great enemy to David. His desire was to take the kingdom and, if possible, to kill his father. That's what he desired. David did not have the same desire for Absalom. He did not want to give up the kingdom, and he did not believe that was God's will. But he was certainly not expressive of the idea that he wanted Absalom to be killed. In fact, when Absalom is killed, he's very sad about that. But that did not make him any less his enemy. And so he mentions him in this psalm. But he also mentions in this not only the courage to ask God and receive from God things, and we'll look at those as we go, but he also says that God has something else for him that he expresses a little bit later in the fourth psalm, and that is that he was able to place gladness in his heart. Even in this time of distress for David, he said God was able to put gladness in his heart. And so, you know, we might look at that psalm a little bit as the saying, well, what can we learn from what David does, and how can we apply that even to the expression in our own hearts about whether we're facing difficulties and problems, and then how we might look at that and approach that. And as I mentioned earlier, the fourth psalm may be a companion psalm to the third, and it may have been written during David's dealing with Absalom's rebellion. And that, we're not going to go through that story this morning. I think most of us, if not all of us, are familiar with that situation. It's found in 2 Samuel chapters 15 through 19. It's a rather long narrative, actually, in the Old Testament to tell us how intent Absalom was to take over his father's kingdom. And, you know, he was a politician, and he set up situations where he tried to gain the favor of the people, and then he tried to take over the kingdom. And ultimately, it was a failure. But it was a time of great lament and distress for David because of that. And so in the midst of a very serious ordeal, David also expresses thankfulness to God. He's not so distressed by the ordeal that he forgets who he serves and what he's doing. And so in verse 7, that's why he says, "You put gladness in my heart." He's thankful about that. So let's do just a brief breakdown of the Psalms this morning, unless I just foray into this a lot further than I intend to, it'll be a rather brief look at this morning, but I hope it'll be something that will kind of lift us up and maybe place gladness in our heart as we look at these things. But what David does in verse 1, he calls upon God to maintain the justice of his cause. He thinks he's right to be king. He thinks he's right to be the leader. And he thinks it's wrong for Absalom to do what he's doing. So he doesn't just capitulate the kingdom. Later, when David is about to die, he assigns one to be king after him. And it's not who everybody thinks it might be. It's going to be Solomon, the son of Bathsheba. And he has other sons. He has a lot of other sons. But they're not going to be king. And he does not choose Absalom. You know, we're told a lot about Absalom. He's very good looking. He's very strong. People were gravitated to him because of his charisma. So he wielded a lot of influence upon people. But David said, he's a wrong man for the kingdom. and he doesn't belong there. And God had not chosen him, as a matter of fact. But listen to what he says here. He says, hear me when I call, O God of my righteousness. That's a cry out. It is a prayer to God. It's the way it's expressed in the Old Testament. Hear me when I call out. I'm seeking your attention. I want you to pay attention as I offer these things. And to me, it expresses a confidence that David maintains, not that he gains, but that he maintains, as we see them in so many of his Psalms, in so many of his situations, that he maintains this confidence of crying out to God because he has put his confidence in God. And he maintains that even in times of distress. So he could be discouraged, he could be depressed, and he could give up on his faith, but he knows that's what he relies upon. And so he says, hear me when I call, O God of my righteousness. You're the one I put my confidence in. And just think of it that way, or this way, when we think about some of the New Testament examples. What are we told in Hebrews? Come therefore boldly to the throne of grace, that we may have confidence that he can help us in times of need. Put our confidence in God. So we need ourselves to approach God in the confidence that our cause is just when we're asking God. In James, we're told, you have not because you ask not, and you have not because you ask amiss. You ask for the wrong things. So have confidence in going before God because we ask for the right things. What did David ask for? He said, "Oh God, in my righteousness, not in my iniquity or not in my sin, but in my righteousness. My cause is just, and I call on God to listen to me." In 2 Thessalonians chapter 1, Paul says, "Since it is a righteous thing with God to repay with tribulation those who trouble you, and to give you who are troubled rest with us, when the Lord is revealed from heaven with his mighty angels." Here, and I use this passage for us to reflect upon the idea that some rest that we will receive is not in this life. We're looking to something to the future. David, I think, was couched in the saving of his kingdom and God hearing his cry in that. But his righteousness was placed in the future, not in the immediate that he was in. So David calls upon God for help, knowing that God has helped him in the past. So he says, hear me when I call, O God of my righteousness. And notice what he says in verse 1. He says, you have relieved me in my distress. Now, think about that for a second. You have relieve me in my distress. So he says, I call on you, but you've already heard me in the past. You've relieved me in my distress. And then he goes on to say, have mercy on me and hear my prayer. Have mercy on me and hear my prayer. So we might say it this way today, please hear me again. Now, how often do we do that? Well, if we think about it, do we not do that quite often? When we approach God, how often do we ask God, at least in a similar way, if not exactly the same way, for things again and again? Sometimes, I admit I'll put it this way. I have a prayer list, my own prayer list. And sometimes I write it down. In fact, quite often I write it down because I, when I'm done, will have forgotten some things I wanted to ask God for. So if I write it down, I remember it better. But you know what I notice in the prayer list? Quite often, many of the things on that list are things that I talked about with God yesterday. And I talk about it with him again today. In fact, I would say, and I don't say you have to do it this way, I'm just giving you an illustration of how I do it, that I have more things that I repeatedly ask God for than I have new things to ask God for. But David is thankful, and David is saying, you heard me, and let me ask again. Let me ask again. And he has a certain confidence in that. In chapter in verse 2, there's an appeal about David's enemies. He says, "Oh, you sons of men." He's not talking about those who are his friends that are helpful to him. He says, "How long, oh, you sons of men, will you turn my glory to shame?" What was Absalom doing to his father? He set him up. He took advantage of him. He despised his name. He brought shame upon his father. Absalom is the one that fulfilled the prophecy about the molestation of David's wives. And he did that in public. So when he talks about shame, he's talking about his enemies bringing shame to him in the ways that they treated him. God had told him it was going to be. But David is asking, how long will you allow that to happen? He doesn't say he doesn't deserve it. He doesn't go to that point. But he says, how long will you turn my glory to shame? He was at one time very glorious, and yet his glory is turned to shame. How long, verse 2, he says, will you love worthlessness and seek falsehood? How long would my enemies follow after my enemy? How long will they do that? Well, if you keep reading the narrative of what happens during Absalom, they turn back to David pretty quickly. But the Absalom had to be defeated before that happened. How long would that happen? Okay. There are two things I think that David is sure of. And we find that in verse 3. And there he says, But know that the Lord has set apart for himself him who is godly. David is sure of one thing, that God, in the end, now remember, he's just addressed the situation with his enemies, that God, in the end, will take care of the godly. Now, is there a good lesson there for us? That in the end, whatever comes, God will take care of the godly. And that's what David is saying. He doesn't know the end from the beginning yet, but he knows God will do what is right and necessary. So he says, but know that the Lord has set apart for himself him who is godly. Now, think about this maybe in the sense of what are the dividing marks? Where would God be with us? I think of a passage in 2 Timothy chapter 2 and verse 19. Paul says there, as he writes to Timothy, he says, nevertheless, the solid foundation of God stands, having this seal. In other words, the foundation stands. It cannot be moved. The Hebrew writer even talks about the very foundation of the church not being able to be moved. That's not necessarily what he's expressing here, but the idea of this solid foundation being unmovable. And he says they're having this seal. In other words, it is set. And it is authorized in this sense. Having this seal, the Lord knows those who are his. Now, we could go, and we're not going to do that this morning, although I'm tempted, we could go to the talking about what the seal is and how God identifies who they are. And I'll just say that quickly without going to establish all that. It's the Holy Spirit that does that. And he says, having this seal, the Lord knows who are his. And he said that everyone who names the name of Christ depart from iniquity. So those who have this seal have an obligation to conduct themselves in a certain way. And that is that they depart from iniquity. They separate them. So what is the dividing mark? Well, according to the Psalm and according to our reference passages, it is righteousness or godliness. God will take care of the godly. And those who are sealed are those who will depart from iniquity. So it's righteousness or godliness. It is holiness, being holy people, and although the word's not used, the idea is there that we are separated, we're separated out, and that is the idea of consecration. So we're consecrated to this means, and then David is saying here that God will take care for himself set apart to himself those who are holy. So he's relying, David is relying here upon his past in approaching God, that God will recognize him because of the way he has conducted himself in the past. So even though our minds might want to go back to, say, Bathsheba, that's not where it should go, because that was, what's the scripture say? In this one thing, David was unfaithful. But what else is said about David in his life itself? So here he says in verse 3, the Lord will hear when I call him. The Lord will hear when I call him. And then in verses 4 and 5, he gives some advice to adversaries. And they're kind of strong emotions if we think about it. He says, be angry and do not sin. So let me ask you, if we place this in the narrative of Absalom's rebellion, did David have a right to be angry about what was happening? Even though he does not protest that he does not deserve it, that some of the things that God said were going to happen to him, happened to him, did he still, would he have a right to be angry about what Absalom was doing, about the rebellion of the people, and about the misuse of his wives? Certainly. But what did he say? Do not sin. Now, I don't know exactly all he meant by that. I don't. I know Paul quotes that when he gets to the Ephesian letter, but not in the context of Absalom's rebellion. But we have him here saying, be angry, but do not sin. In other words, be careful, and we might put it to, don't charge God in some foolish way. Be careful. And what's the lesson there for us? Often when things go wrong or we feel distressed about something, we have a tendency to blame that on God. You know, why did God do this to us? Well, we might be very careful about that and ask, did God do it to us to begin with? And so think carefully. Be angry and do not sin. And I think there is a special temptation, you know, during the night hours for us to brood over past things as well as present perils. So, in other words, when are you most likely to be disconcerted and worried? Or anxious when you wake up at night? Ever notice that when you're in the middle of the night, it's dark, you have things to think about. What can overwhelm you? Your concerns and your worries. They can do that. We've talked about that in different circumstances and situations, but there's a temptation for that to happen. And notice what he says here in verse 4. He says, meditate within your heart on your bed and be still. And be still. Do you get the point that he's making there? Don't allow that to overwhelm you. And there's a key to having confidence, even in that situation. And he says, offer, verse 5, offer the sacrifice of righteousness. When you wake up and you're anxious about, I know we have right now a tendency to just think about one thing, but brethren, I'm going to tell you, we're anxious about all kinds of things. That hasn't ceased. We all have things that we need to work out and maybe smooth out. It's not just one thing. Even though the world's concentrating on one thing, life goes on, and we all recognize that. And here, you know, we find this idea to offer the sacrifice of righteousness. So when we wake up and we're anxious about whatever it is we might be anxious about, what's a good thing to do right then? Starts with a P. It's a good time to pray, isn't it? It's a good time to meditate on the things that we have placed our confidence in and our trust in about ourselves. That's what David is talking about here. That's what he's doing. Okay? In Psalms 51, in verse 17, he says, the sacrifices of God are a broken spirit a broken and contrite heart, these, O God, you will not despise. Yeah. So when we wake up and anxious and we have a contrite heart, guess what? God says, I don't despise that. Put it this way, you can talk to me about that, he's saying. You can think about that. 1 Timothy 2 verse 8 says, I desire therefore that men pray everywhere, lifting up holy hands without wrath and without doubting. In other words, you can pray anytime, anywhere, and take advantage of that. There's not a set place that we can offer up prayer to God. And in the still of the night, in the darkness of your room, in the quietness of your bed, that's a good place for prayer. You know, what James says about this idea of praying? He says, pray with confidence. Pray with confidence. Now, he doesn't say it that way. This is the way he does say it. He says, let him ask in faith, nothing doubting, for let not that man think that he will receive anything of the Lord. So if you pray in doubt, then he said, don't expect to get a positive answer. But if you pray with confidence, expect God to answer your prayer in the confidence that you give. Okay. And we can contrast that with another theme in the Bible, and that's what I'll call the sacrifice of fools. There are those who offer things to God, but they really do it with reservation. They hold it back, or they don't fulfill their commitment. So when we pray, when you pray to God, do you ever say to God in some form or another, if you do thus and so, I will do thus and so? Well, let me tell you, that's a biblical concept. You can find that in the scriptures. And it's not as if we're bargaining with God. We're just saying to God that I agree to do these. David made the comment many times that if you do thus and so for me, even in dealing with his enemies, he says, I will praise and proclaim your name among the nations. I will not be quiet about what you have done for us or for me. But sometimes we make rash promises. And in Ecclesiastes 5 and verse 1, we read, walk prudently when you go into the house of God. In other words, be careful when you go to worship. And draw near to hear rather than to give the sacrifice of fools. For they do not know they do evil. Now what is he saying by that? When you go to worship, draw near to hear what God has to say, rather than to give the sacrifice of food. I mean, that we could express that. And I did a sermon on that one time where I tried to lead some songs in doing it, and I decided that wasn't a good idea. but the point I was trying to make was when we sing our songs, many of the songs that we sing are saying that we do thus and so, or that we will do thus and so. And he says, don't do that and don't intend to keep those promises. Don't offer the sacrifice of fools. And then verse 5, he also says, and put your trust in the Lord. Know where to put your trust. And then verses 6 and through 8 is kind of the conclusion of the things he has to say here. And he says in verse 6, he says, there are many who say, who will show us any good? And at the very least, I think he's talking about skeptics. He's talking about those that were against him in rebellion, even against God. But at the very least, he's talking about those who are pessimistic about God being able to deliver. And you know, in Malachi chapter 3 and verse 14, Malachi talks about those who don't give the sacrifice or give less than the sacrifice or don't put their trust in God. There's a whole litany of things there that he talks about, but he says, you, and he's talking there about the unfaithful. He says, you have said, it is useless to serve God. We have not gained what we think we should gain from that. He said, you have said, it's useless to serve God. What profit is it that we have kept his ordinance and that we have walked as mourners before the Lord of hosts? What profit is there in serving God is the question they're asking. We have not seen the benefit yet. And sometimes people are like that. We haven't seen an immediate benefit. But he says, there are many who say, he will show us any good. Well, that's not David, but he's saying there are many that do that. And then verse 6, he says, Lord, lift up the light of your countenance upon us. Shine your light upon us. Let us be enlightened, might be another way to express that. In Numbers chapter 6, we find Aaron there giving a blessing upon the people of Israel. And here's what we read. The Lord bless you and keep you. The Lord make his face to shine upon you and be gracious to you. The Lord lift up his countenance upon you and give you peace. You know what that is? A prayer blessing. That's a great prayer, isn't it? And David is saying here, Lord, lift up the light of your countenance upon us. It's the same kind of blessing that he's pronouncing in that thing. And there is a prayer of thanksgiving for the safety that God provides in verses 7 and 8. He says, you have put gladness in my heart more than in the season that their grain and wine increased. He's contrasting again his enemy to what God has done. And he says, they see a blessing in the harvest, and I see a blessing that's greater than that in the gladness God has put in my heart. And we might remember that for David, again, he does not see, evidently from what we can tell from the psalm, he does not see the end from the beginning. He doesn't know what's going to happen yet. But that doesn't keep him from offering this praise to God and talking about these things that he does. So we might put it this way. It's not about the here and now. It's not about the immediate. It's about what we're looking to in the future, what we're desiring. Because all accounts aren't settled today. And we need to keep that in mind. In 2 Corinthians chapter 4, beginning with verse 16, Paul says, therefore, we do not lose heart, even though our outward man is perishing, and yet the inward man is being renewed day by day. So if we just look at the outside, we might come to a different conclusion than if we look at the inside or the spiritual. And he says, for our light affliction, I love that in this passage, because we have a whole long list of very difficult things that Paul has suffered through, and he says, for our light affliction. But when you look at the overall picture, it's not that bad anyway. You know, but if he was just thinking about the here and now, the immediate, it would be severe. But he says, for our light affliction, which is but for a moment, is working for us a far more exceeding and eternal weight of glory. While we do not look at the things which are seen, but at the things which are not seen. For the things which are seen are temporary, but the things which are not seen are eternal. What is he saying? We're looking to the eternal and not to the here and now. And if we're focused on the here and now, brethren, we're not focused on the eternal. And that's where our focus needs to be. And then look at verse 8. I will both lie down in peace and sleep. Now remember, we said this is conclusion. He's looked at all these different things, and what he's essentially saying is, okay, I've given this prayer, now I'm going to go to sleep. I put my confidence and trust in God that he will do as he promised. I'm not living in the here and now. Here's my prayer. Now I'm going to go to sleep. That's pretty good advice, isn't it? Can't get much better than that. And he says, for, there's a reason. For, he says, O Lord, you alone make me to dwell in safety. In other words, I'm putting my trust in you. And now I'm going to go to sleep. That's pretty good. And I don't know if I can add anything more to what David says here. I think it's that good. But I am going to add one more verse. In chapter 3, going back one chapter, in verse 8, he said, salvation belongs to the Lord, and your blessing is upon your people. And that fits right into this, doesn't it? So here is an evening psalm where he says all these good things. And he says, now when you've done that, just go to sleep. You put your care on the Lord. And that's good advice. Thank you for listening. Bless and joy.